You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Shayna Bergman, and we talk about a moment when she snapped in her professional life. We also talk about what she did next so that that didn't happen again. Part of this story is a pandemic and a lockdown story. I think a lot of us have those. Maybe most of us have those. Is there anybody who doesn't have one? I guess people who are really, really young may not really remember it. But for most people, even though it was not great, it was not a great time to be like doing stuff. So for some people, it did have an upside that it showed us parts of our life that just weren't really working. And in amongst all the yuck, gave us a chance to do something about it. We do also talk about watching television or actually not watching television. And I mentioned the Lego movie, which is kind of random, and shopping sprees. I think you're going to love it. So let's get to it. Shayna Bergman, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I'm ready. I'm excited. Let's do it.
Let's go. All right. I start all of my interviews by asking my guests, what part of the world do you call home?
So I'm in Fairfax, Virginia, which is right outside Washington, D.C.
It sure is. It sure is. That's a great place to be. All right. So in a second, we're going to talk about the official topic, which is not Virginia or DC or the horrible traffic that they have there. But I want to ask one more warm-up question, and this is how it goes. The saying is that laughter is the best medicine. So would you share with us something in your life that is pretty sure to give you a smile or a laugh?
This might be cliche, but it is my kiddos. This morning I was going through my daughter's backpack and she had some work that she did where she had to create an animal that was matched with another item, and she created sea lettuce, which was seal lettuce. And she drew this picture of a seal with lettuce, and I just thought it was hysterical. I was dying looking at that this morning.
Very good. It is always a mystery what is going to be in the bag that comes home from school.
Sure is.
It is a mystery. All right. Mm-hmm. So, I've had kids that range the spectrum, like kids that are really organized in the backpack, kids that have an empty backpack, and kids that shove everything in the backpack. It's like, it's hilarious. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. All right. So the topic of the day, not backpacks, you shared that during the pandemic, I think this probably means lockdown, you were drowning in work, parenting two young kids, and losing yourself in the chaos. One rude conversation at work finally snapped something in you. So we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about how your life changed after. So to start with a question, I'd love to go back to a time before the pandemic. Tell us a little bit about what your normal was before the pandemic. Job, family, hobbies, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, my normal was sort of a go, go, go type of life. I was working full time in a job that I really loved a lot. It was very busy. I was having some questions about, is this it? I had a little bit of like kind of feeling like this maybe wasn't the end all be all, but I was on the hamster wheel like so many people are. You know, I had two little kids pre-pandemic. The littlest one was even littler. And it was just running. It was like going to daycare in the morning and then getting into work, and we were commuting. And sometimes I was, you know, if I was, when my kids were little, I was pumping. So I was bringing all my stuff on the metro and pumping at work and in all the meetings, and then running home and picking them up from daycare and doing baths and dinner and bedtime and rinse and repeat. It was a very full life. Like I would say, everything was lovely. And at the same time, and I have an amazing husband who's an amazing partner, but at the same time, it was like, there was always this little knowing of like, I guess this is it. I guess I've arrived and like, it's all working great. And I didn't really question it at the time.
Okay. All right. Very good. So now nobody was expecting lockdown. It's going to go down. I think if you were to fast forward 100 years in time and look in a history book, it is going to go down as one of the just biggest surprises for like a giant number of people. Like no one was expecting it. But tell us a little bit about what lockdown was like, because everybody who's going to watch this has a lockdown experience of their own. But tell us what lockdown was like for your family. What changed for you guys?
So we were pretty extreme. We don't have any family in the area. So my husband and I took the approach of we cannot get this. We cannot get sick. At the time, obviously, some people were dying. It was like, we are seeing nobody. So we were not the family that was bringing in help during the day. We were not the family that was in trying to find pods of people to get together with. We saw no one. And so my husband, who also works full time, and I had the kids home day in and day out. We obviously thought it was going to be short-lived. And I remember before that, even if a kid was sick for a day, it was like, oh God, I've got to rearrange the schedule and I'm going to have people frustrated and I'm going to miss this big meeting. And oh, this is so tough. And now it's like it was this indefinite kids are home and bored. And we were trying to juggle, how to keep them entertained. We both were working full time during this as well. I had my daughter in virtual kindergarten, which meant she really didn't know how to operate a computer. So we're also helping her with virtual kindergarten. I have a son running around in diapers, and it was just like total chaos. And I have a very optimistic personality. I'm a very, very glass half full person. And so I was able to maintain that kind of thinking like, we're all in it together. We're all doing this. I'm doing the best I can. But what it meant was that as much as I was trying to work during the day, and I was also in a new role, I was leading a huge team. I had an important job, it was very high exposure. I was trying to keep it all together. And because I was also with my kids during the day, I was also now working further into the night, even though that was already my norm. Now I was working until like 3 and 4 in the morning to do the stuff that I didn't get to do during the day and waking up 3 hours later and doing it again. So life was total chaos. And I think I was probably at the time almost numb to what was happening around me because I had to be. It was just like, you just got to get it done. And so I did.
There wasn't a lot of choice. You lost separation between the different pockets of the life. It wasn't by choice. You were doing the best you could. One of my favorite stories about lockdown from my own life is that a very good friend of mine that I have who's younger than I am and is a single parent, he called me partway through lockdown. He's like, so I don't understand how I'm supposed to do this. I'm trying to do virtual preschool and also work my job from home. And I was like, what does that even mean, virtual preschool? Like, why are you doing that? Like the entire point of preschool is that the child leaves you and goes somewhere else. And he was like, I know, but it's prepaid. And I was like, this, listen, there's no, I don't know how to do this. There's no way to do this. Like, this, don't do it. Like, change it so you're not doing this because, it was circle time and singing and, walking a preschooler through like online learning was, it just seemed to me to be hilarious, actually, just really, really funny. But the reason that resonated with me is when you tell the story, it's like people didn't know what to do. And there is a truth, which is that we kind of only choose what we're doing from the choices that we see in front of us. And so, and that's just kind of the way we do everything. And so during lockdown, we were following the steps that were immediately in front of us, and everything was unusual. Nobody knew what they were doing. And that created some really funny moments. They weren't funny at the
Absolutely.
time.
No,
Many
looking
of them were
back.
not funny at the time. All right. So your life was pushed to the max, staying up till 3, 4 in the morning trying to get everything done. You were probably getting up at 5:36 in the morning. So not sleeping, all of these things. You say that you snapped. A rude conversation at work finally snapped something at you. And you tell us as much or as little as you want, but tell us what happened.
It's funny. Initially, people were very understanding of all the things that we were juggling. Like, yeah, take your time. We know that you've got your kids. And then I think it just became the norm and it sort of was like business as usual, even though business was nowhere near usual. And me dealing with sort of big personalities was a very normal thing. I was used to it. I was actually really good at it. But I think the stress of things started to pile up and I was maybe a minute late to a Zoom meeting with two people, one who I worked very closely with. It was two men, one who I didn't work as closely with, but was normally quite rude. And I was late, I think, because I was coming from another meeting and maybe had to get my kids lunch or it was something like that. So, but late was a minute, which is pretty normal. And I got on and I got screamed at. I mean, it was a next level cursing and screaming. And I was so taken aback because while I was used to dealing with not always the nicest people, it was a lot at that moment. And my initial reaction was like, this is very much about this guy and not about me. And at the same time, I was looking for the third person on the call who knew me well to put him in his place and say, hey, dude, It's not necessary. It's, you don't need to speak like that. Like she's 30 seconds late, a minute late.
Right.
And instead, that person had to jump off the phone. And what he said was, "I need you two to play nice in the sandbox, especially you, Shayna." And now I was in a role of human resources at the time. I was poker faced constantly. I was always even keeled, never kind of high or low, like always advising, always in this consulting role. And I remember thinking to myself, play nice in the sandbox. First of all, I didn't do anything. I'm always
Right.
playing nice in the sandbox. And it wasn't even that that comment on its own would have done anything. But I think it just said so much more to me in that moment that I think I was waiting to hear in some way. Like, I don't know, there was something about it that I just realized, like, I'm not in the right seat. I'm not doing what I need to be doing here. And if that's what I'm going to be told, and I'm not going to be defended, and I'm going to be basically told like it's okay to treat people that way, and I was a party to it, I just felt like I'm not doing the right thing. And it was for me a little bit of validation of what I was sensing and knowing all along, and really starting to speak to what I had really wanted anyway since I was a kid. I had always seen that people were so full of potential, they had all this greatness in them. And then life kind of hardens you and you start to kind of lose who you are, myself included. And so, as I was sort of realizing through this conversation what was happening, I thought to myself, I could keep working here and working with people like this and being part of the problem, or I could actually help people like this not do this to other people because it was happening all along. It wasn't just me. I wasn't unique. I wasn't special in that moment. I knew that. But it was like something clicked where I was like, okay, I'm inside the problem. I need to step outside of it and help. And so that was the conversation that all of a sudden like lit the fire for me.
All right, so I'm going to double click on that and talk a little bit about more about what happened in the conversation. So, if I understand it correctly, it's you and two men in a meeting, and you perceive that one of the men who is engaging with you acts in a publicly facing, inappropriate way, an obviously aggressive, slightly abusive, inappropriate way that shouldn't be tolerated in any workplace. The other person in the room not only doesn't defend you, but asks you to rise to the cause and do more than your fair share in maintaining an equitable, safe workplace.
100%.
Right. What part of this, this is not a feminist podcast or anything like that, but what part of this do you think actually represents really workplace dynamics between men and women in leadership roles?
I was seeing it a lot. I don't want to say it's everywhere. I'm also, I'm pretty balanced that way, but it's not atypical. And given the reason why I was late, and given that we were all juggling a lot of things, I think there could have been a little bit of understanding. And I think being told as the woman in the room to play nicely in the sandbox indicated perhaps I wasn't, even though I always did. And I knew that about myself. I'm self-aware, so I can certainly take a criticism. But in that moment, I was like, that was not the right thing to say.
Yeah, as
But
an
it was,
outsider, I would say that it wasn't just that you were being told to play nicely in the sandbox. You were being told that not only is it your job to do your part, but it's also your job to manage the play box,
A
the
thousand
sandbox.
percent. A thousand percent. And that was my job always, was to manage the sandbox.
Right, which does come down. We call that the emotional load and the
That's
hidden
it.
workplace of women. Like it's like nobody tells you that it's your job to manage the play bo play the sandbox, but if you don't do it, you'll be held accountable
A
for the
thousand
fact that
percent.
other people are not doing the job. And you're standing around. You're like, why is it my job to tell you like what you know? Where are the people who actually manage your life? And I will say that something that I taught. One of the things about this show is that I'm trying to create a platform that crosses age demographics. Right. So, because one of the things is that you want to believe that the changes that happen for the women who were in like the boomer generation change things for women who are Gen X, change things for millennials and Gen Z. But if you talk to people who are still going through the workplace, not as much has changed as some people might want to think.
Absolutely. That's spot on. And that's many of my clients are in the same boat.
And so that's the reason it's like helpful to have people who are like, you got to talk to people across the lines and do those things. That's one of the things I'm trying to do. So, because I mean, I would hope that the fight that I had as a 20 something year old in an office would have made change for my daughter who will be working in an office. And yet the reality is that maybe it will and maybe it won't. And so we have to keep talking. Anyway, so I can't fix workplace politics. Anyway, you snap. You shared with me that this sent you on a messy, terrifying, and freeing path of building a life that actually fit you. So I want to talk a little bit more about those two words, fit you. So you had this job, you said you loved it. It was high demand, public facing. We know that it was in human resources. And it was something that you enjoyed and found filling. How long had you, like, is this a career path, human resources? Is this something that you had known for a long time you wanted to do? Is it something that you intentionally created in your life? Like, how did you get to where you were?
I knew that I always wanted to help people feel more motivated at work. That was kind of where I started. And so I had internships in college that were HR related. And then I took off down an HR career path with getting my master's and getting certifications and all the things. So I always pursued it actively. But if I'm being honest, it was slightly adjacent to what I had really wanted. I knew about coaching from a very, very early age. My parents used to listen to Tony Robbins, so on cassette tape. So I'd be in the back of the station wagon listening to him with them. And so it was more that I really wanted. I wanted to inspire people and motivate people and help them be their best. And to me, I thought HR was the way I could do that. I thought that was the closest thing because I told myself I could never be a coach. I would never be able to inspire people. I could never speak that way. And so it was like the closest thing I could do to it. And I did it really well. I was very successful at it. And so it fit all the things until it didn't.
Yeah, that happens. That does happen. You do something, it fits the boxes, you're checking along, and then all of a sudden, like, whoops, no. I love that you grew up listening to Tony Robbins on
I
cassette.
did.
I don't even know if that really happens as much now, and because people listen to things on their earbuds. Like, it used to be that, and we don't spend as much time in cars as we did maybe 10 or 15 years ago. But the it used to be that whatever your parents listened to or watched, you were subjected to. You were like ingrained in the news they watched, things like that. Now we have more of a choice to not do those things, watch on our devices, watch on our computers, listen to podcasts. But 100%, and that what a fun thing. What a fun thing to do. P Tony Robbins brings up big opinions in people, but
This was old school Tony Robbins. He was a very different person back then.
he's and you know he's one of the things that I will say about Tony Robbins is he's never not admitted what he is. He's very upfront about who he is, and he rubs people the wrong way. But that just is, that is a situation and all kind of things. You don't have to like him, but a long time ago he made a documentary of himself. I think he did it. I don't think somebody else did it. That was like, I am not your guru. He was like, I'm
Yes, he
not
did.
actually telling you what to do. You don't have to come and, partake in my, you don't have to pay me. There's no rules. But yeah. So, and I'm also not defending Tony Robbins. I don't like, I haven't, I have, it just is what it is. It is what it is. So, looking back now, this is a dangerous thing to do, right? But there's two ways to do this because looking back, we get a different reflection on what things were like than what it was like living it. Looking back, think about how much you knew that what kind of awareness was going on before a lockdown about the dissatisfaction and the curiosity that maybe you weren't doing what you wanted to really do.
I wonder the same thing, to be honest. I know I wasn't feeling as inspired as I wanted to be. I wasn't looking at the people above me and saying, I really want to do that. In fact, it was the opposite, where I was like, what does that say that I don't really want to do that? But I think because I was so good at what I was doing and I kept getting validation and recognition and told that I was being successful, I think that was enough at the time. And I think because I was raising kids, I was busy. It's like it was all working. It was all great. Our life was great. There was nothing wrong. But I think it was when that conversation happened, all of a sudden I had that, like, it really truly was a click or a snap. I don't know how else to explain it, where I said to myself, I am not doing what I want to be doing. I'm not really living the dream life that I set out for myself. And if I believe in this stuff that I heard as a kid, which I always was watching and listening to it my whole life. I would pick up books on leadership and books on potential. I mean, that was my fun thing to do. If I'm not really doing this, then am I really living the life that I want to be living? And I think it took a conversation like that. And again, it was a small conversation, but it was like it was the straw that broke the camel's back type of conversation,
Yeah.
for me to sort of say, well, what is it going to take if I want to do this other thing? What would have to happen? And you can imagine when you ask yourself a question like that, all of the reasons why it doesn't make sense are what come up. You start to keep yourself safe, right? Your brain's telling you, don't do that. That's too risky. Don't do that. And so I played in that space for a little bit of, I don't know if this really makes sense. Like everything is great as much as it can be during a pandemic. Why would I upset the apple cart? And yet there was like this other knowing in me that was like, if I don't try, I will forever live with regret. And I knew that, and that became my motivator.
Okay. All right. So, have you ever seen the Lego movie?
Yes.
So the character is Emmett, and he sings that song, "Everything is awesome." And you're a coach, I think, right? You're a coach. Okay.
I
So
am.
the idea of the limiting belief, when we talk about everything is great, what was your concept of this is great before you began to question it? Like, do you think that you were just like, yeah, this is what great is supposed to be, and you needed something to show you, hey, this is maybe not what great is?
That's an interesting question. I think I thought it was. And yet, I think if somebody really cracked me open at the time and had me get rid of the surface level, I'm checking all the boxes,
Yeah.
I think I would have been able to identify something's missing, but I can't put my finger on it. And I really couldn't put my finger on it until I could.
Okay, that's fair. Because one of the things is there's a lot of research right now, or maybe there always has been, but I'm aware of it right now, in that when we have a belief system, like a faith, or we truly believe something, it's actually quite hard to change that. You need something actually has to happen that causes you to question what you are believing, you know? So that's the reason I was thinking about that question, and why I started singing in my head, "Everything is awesome." All right, so let's go back to the snap. You snap in this. So when you said snap, I think I might have, when I read your intake form, I might have overemphasized what happened in the snap and made it slightly more dramatic in my mind than it might have been. But how did your support system, your family, respond when you began to tell them, like, hey, a change is coming? Like, I have made this decision, it is done, things are changing.
It actually, I mean, it was dramatic for me. I'm not
Okay.
a big drama person, but like I cried that night to my husband. Like I was
Okay, so
upset,
yeah,
which is
you
not
snapped.
my,
Okay.
it's not my MO to be that way usually. Usually I can be more logical, but I was quite upset. And it was in that conversation that I said to him, I think I need to go get certified in coaching. I think, and he was like, just start it, just do it. And I was like, no, I want to be thoughtful. I want to do this to me the right way. I want to be legit. But I think I need to like pursue it. I think I need to leave and do my own thing. And he was like, great, like, let's do it. I've been waiting for you. You know, nobody's going to be surprised by this. Let's do it. But for me, the idea of starting to shift my identity from this person that had this great career and was getting this great paycheck and, you know, had this great trajectory laid out in front of her, I was anticipating judgment from anybody. Like, why would you do this? Like, what are you thinking? You're just having a midlife, you know, crisis. So I was very private about it, actually. I really didn't tell anybody because I needed to get myself to a place of certainty with it. I think I needed to get my pla myself to a place of really understanding what I was doing and why, so that when people asked me, what are you thinking? And I was getting questioned, it wouldn't impact me in any way. So my journey was quite private, actually. When I decided officially, like, I'm going to invest in getting certified, which was a hefty investment at the time, I did it thinking, I'm not just going to get certified. I'm getting certified so that I can leave, so that I can start my own business. I was never an entrepreneur before that. It was never something I was thinking about. So for me to wrap my head around it was a lot. And so I
Okay.
started having conversations with people that didn't know me that were doing it to ask, like, can I really do this? Tell me what your story was, trying to learn from other people with my husband as my cheerleader the whole time. And then little by little, like I remember saying to my parents, I'm thinking about something. You know, I'm letting you know that this is what I'm doing. And I wasn't really looking for permission or validation from them, but they also were like, it's about time. Like, no, nobody that I told along the
Oh,
way was
interesting.
surprised by what I was doing.
That is really interesting. Okay, so you had never been an entrepreneur. Do you have other people in your life,
My whole
parents,
family.
your whole family is in business and freelancing and things like that? That is really interesting. All right, so Like, so I have been a freelancer, creative. The shortest season of my life is where I worked for somebody else. And so I have a history of, like, since I was a knee high to a grasshopper, I'm the person who walks in and is like, here's what we're going to do. And people are like, okay, what's the crazy idea this week, Amy? So yeah, but there are so many more people who are like, what? No. And I just gotta get a nod to the fact that you went into this saying, like, I'm gonna go through my coaching process with the idea of legitimacy in mind, because coaching is completely unregulated, and completely unregulated. Like, the concept of legitimacy within the field of coaching is actually just self-contained. It's
A
like
thousand percent.
pick your poison and call yourself legit. So exactly. And I say that because I can choose the other thing is the vocabulary within the profession of coaching is just not, it doesn't work. So it is very confusing. All right. So let's talk about how you connected with what you wanted to do next in life, because it seems that there were some breadcrumbs here that you were pulling together.
Yes, there were.
Okay, so let's talk about what that was and how you began, because you did also say you were like, I didn't know what the thing is that was missing. So let's talk about how you pulled that together.
So part of the reason that I was, I keep using successful, and I'm using it truly in quotes before,
Sure.
was because people were coming to me for coaching. They didn't know it, and I didn't know it. But what they were coming to me for was reflecting back to them what I was seeing and hearing, which gave them insights and awarenesses. It was helping them think differently than how they were thinking. It was questioning certain things because I had a trust and a rapport with people at all levels, all the way from interns up to partners and directors. And I was unique in that way, and I was known for that. And I was able to recognize that what I was doing was like coaching. I also recognized I wasn't yet really doing it properly because I was not certified. I hadn't taken any classes in it. And yet I was always seen as that person, also from friends and family. I've always been that person. So it wasn't new that that was something that I was naturally very good at. But something about the idea of having to like build a business around it and make money doing it and call myself a coach, I mean, that seemed like crazy. Even now, years later, I still have some imposter syndrome around it, like that I'm
Yeah.
actually doing the thing that I said I was going to do. But my whole life, I was coaching. It wasn't, necessarily as structured as I do it now with, background and research and all that kind of stuff, but I was always doing that kind of thing. And so it wasn't far-fetched for me to be going in that direction, which is why as I started to verbalize what I was doing, and eventually when I resigned, people were like, this makes so much sense. Nobody said to me, like, are you insane? A few
Oh,
people
good.
thought that because of the choice of leaving this very stable environment. But in terms of what I was doing, there was no surprise.
That is awesome. That's a fantastic experience to have gone through. And so what you're saying is that you had been representing and embodying this in many ways that you didn't realize until you went through the process and got the training and surrounded yourself with people who were doing the thing that you were training to do, and it began to become clear that this was what fit for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in literally day one, when I started getting trained, it was like I felt like I had been like freed. I don't know how else to explain it. It was like, this makes so much sense to me. And as I was going through learning how to do this, I was being coached myself. And thank goodness for that, because without that, I never would have left my corporate job. There's no way
Yeah.
without having a partner by my side to help me think through it and break down all the limiting beliefs that I had about it. But like I knew when I was in those courses and I was getting coached, like I could feel this was meant for me. I finally felt like everything made sense. Like, of course I have to do this. There was no longer a question. It was like, I've arrived. This is it. I'm home.
That's beautiful. That's really, really wonderful. So I'm going to assume that you went through ICF training.
I did.
Yeah, that is the one that holds itself out as that. Hilariously, I have like a probably, I don't even know. I should sit down one day and figure out how many coaching certificates I've accumulated in the last 30 years. But when I got my life coaching certification, I was doing my practice hours. One of the people when the peer-to-peer coaching was like, oh, are you doing ICF? And I was like, what's that? What's that? I'd never even heard of it. I'd literally never even heard of it. That's how much of a bubble I was in of like, I'm just gonna do this next thing. And I still laugh at that because when I opened up the website, I was like, wow, I did not That is so funny. So, all right, so very good. So, you're in the coaching program. A big part of coaching is being coached and practicing coaching and doing all those things. Very introspective. Many people make personal shifts in their life while they're going through coaching certification because they force you to think about what you're going to do. Fast forward, you change. You make a change. You leave your job. All of those things. How long ago? This is 2020, so this is 5 years ago. Okay, so very good. So, it's 2020 when you got your certification.
It was, I think I got it in 2022 and I started the process maybe 2021. It was about a year.
That is in the end that for anybody who's watching, that was sort of like the high point in online coaching. It was a really, really, everybody was doing it. And if you weren't doing it, you were being left out. Just kidding. Most people were not doing it, but a lot of people were doing it. Okay, so fast forward all the way to the present. How has your life, and I sort of mean day-to-day life, changed for the better? And if there are things that maybe are not so much better, what happened as a result of making these changes, quitting your job and changing professions?
So, as hard as this may be to believe when I say it, and even when I say it, it feels ridiculous. I am truly, truly living the life that I dreamed of, that I never thought I could live. I never thought I could be doing this. And the reason for that, and the reason I describe it that way is because I have control over my day. I get to impact people that impact people that impact people. I get to be at the helm of people's ripple effects. I get to watch them transform in ways that they never thought they could, just like I did. And so while I haven't walked in everybody's shoes, I have lived my own transformation and I know what bravery and courage and work it takes to do that. And so to be able to help other people do that is so fulfilling. It's like all I need in my day. I mean, it is my joy, honestly. And for me, because I'm a parent and because I was in a leadership role, that's who I coach. I coach parents in leadership roles. I know the hamster wheel. I was on it. And I know what it's like, and I know the impact it has on your family. And I know that even though my family was always my priority in my before life, I call it my before life, even when I was with my kids then, I wasn't with them. My brain was spinning on what do I need to do and who do I need to call and what's the project that's coming up? And it was like, go, 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 go. Now, when I'm with my kids, I'm with my kids. I am fully present with them in a different way. I go to sleep at night with my head on the pillow, fulfilled because I help somebody's day. And I'm not, freaking out about what's going to happen in the meeting tomorrow and who's going to yell at me about something that's totally ridiculous and what kind of attitude am I going to get unnecessarily, because now I'm helping a lot of those people and they want it. They want to be helped. And so now I feel like where before I felt like I was part of the problem in a way, now I feel like I'm able to help those people. And what's very ironic is that the person that yelled at me that day and the person who was on the call with me that day have both been my clients.
Oh, I love that.
I did not go to pursue them. It was never, but they knew that that was something that I did naturally, and I think they both knew that they had some stuff to work on. And I give them a lot of credit for recognizing it, and we've since talked about that day and what happened. But to be able to help people and know that maybe I'm making the world a little bit better than it was yesterday, what more can I ask for in my life? And the fact that I get to see my kids and I get to have space in my day and I take my 20-minute nap every day and I exercise and I do things that are important to me. I mean, it really truly is a very, very different existence than it was before.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, it's, having control over your calendar, which is, it seems like such a small thing, but it really, for a lot of people, it can make a big difference, a very, very big difference. Okay, so in a minute, we're going to do the final questions, but you t said a little tiny bit about this, but I want you to be, give you the chance to be very direct and tell people, what you do, who you help, which is the coaching thing, your help statement, and how you want people to connect with you after the show.
Sure. So I help parents in leadership roles try to find what their version of success is, but with a lot less stress. And so, you can find me at a lot of different places, but I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook at Shayna Bergman Coaching. And I also send out a weekly email to my audience of parents in leadership roles, which is usually like tips and tricks. It's not spammy, it's like truly helpful stuff. I always get responses saying, "Oh my God, thank you. You made me think differently. Oh, this totally changed how I had this conversation." My goal is to help people become better versions of themselves so that they impact their families in different ways, they impact their teams in different ways, they impact their organizations, their communities, and ultimately the world. And that is my why. It's why I do what I do. It's why I love what I do. So that's how people can stay connected to me.
Excellent. All right. So you have a really good offer for the audience today. I'm going to share it with people. So you have a product that is called Design Your Year, a guide to thriving personally and professionally. So it's a guide that helps you create a life where your personal values, family life, and leadership responsibilities are fully aligned. And so you're working through this product, creating a tailored 12-month roadmap, which is a long time, guys, for growth and gain strategies to balance high performance at work with deeper connections at home. Sounds good. The value of this product for everybody listening is normally just under $500, $499, but there's a link in the show notes and in the email that I send out to the audience where you can get it for free. So that's a spectacular deal. I hope that everybody takes advantage of it. The best way to get all the links for the things that are in the show, because the show is out there forever, it's evergreen, is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email community, because then I send it directly into your inbox. And so if it's a limited time, limited quantity offer, you just click on the link, you never miss it. So that's the best way to do it. All right, Shayna, are you ready for the final questions?
I think so.
I love it when I say that very dramatically and then come up with these absolutely ridiculous chat and questions that make me so happy. These questions bring me so much joy. I love this. This is like, it's all right, very good. Do you watch television? And are you willing to share with us something that you are enjoying, like on TV at the moment?
I wish I could tell you I did. I do not watch television. No, I
Okay.
don't.
So I knew it could flop. I knew it could flop because
Yep,
there are
I
those
don't.
people who don't watch TV. So
I mean, I've
what do you
seen
do
TV. Like,
with
there are
your
things I
time?
watch, but it's very rare that we watch
You
TV.
watch TV. What do you guys do? Like, what do you do? Like, what do you like? Are you
I'm a
like out
geek,
there?
Amy. I'm usually working, but it doesn't feel like that. It feels like playing, and it's very hard for me to put it down because I have so much fun.
Okay. All
Truly.
right. Very good. Very good. All right. So then this one may also flop. We'll see. So
Okay,
I'm, so
let's
far
try
I'm
it.
0 for 3. So I know that people don't go to the movies as often as they used to, but when you used to go to the movie theater, what was your favorite movie theater snack?
Oh, that's a good one. It's always popcorn and a soda. I'm not usually a soda drinker, but when I have popcorn, I like to have like a Coke Zero.
So, that's a whole thing. I watched a thing about food research recently, is that apparently the reason that we love carbonated drinks when we is related to the fat content and the salt in the food. There's something about it. So, like when you go to like a burger restaurant, that's why that carbonated thing feels so good, because your mouth is like coated with salt and
I like
fat.
it with pizza too, so that makes total
Yeah,
sense.
I mean, listen, if
Yep.
it's wrong, somebody can let me know, but I watched it on a show and they sounded like they knew what they were doing. I didn't fact check it, but it does. It passes the common sense test because, like,
It
oh,
does.
right, that feels true.
It does.
Things that pass the common sense test are not often true, not always true, but that one feels like it's probably right. Okay, if you won a contest and you got a shopping spree and you have $10,000 to spend in any store that you want, there's two rules. You have to spend it on yourself and you can only spend it in one store. What store do you pick?
Oh my goodness. I'm not a huge
I
shopper.
know.
This is a
Everybody
tricky
always
one.
says this. Who are you? I'm like
I'm
totally not a
not.
shopper, but I could come up with at least 10 stores that I would do this in.
Okay, but I'm going to answer your question. It's probably going to be like a home goods experience. I have to say
Fair.
it's going to be home goods. Yeah.
There you
Yeah.
go. No, absolutely. Yeah, I could drop 10 grand in HomeGoods. I could drop 10 grand in Home Depot in like a second. Like,
That's
right?
fair. Yeah.
It's like
That's
our
fair.
new appliances done.
Absolutely.
Exactly. But people, so far, everybody I've asked that question is like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, and meanwhile, I'm like, I could hit up Galeries Lafayette in Paris, no problem. drop me off in Neiman Marcus, I'd walk out with two things. That's like one dress and
That's
maybe not even a
true.
pair of shoes.
That's
So
true.
there we go. All right, that's it. Shayna Bergman, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thanks for having me, Amy. This was fun.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.